So I'll say, my name's Sam, I'm an addict. When I was in the toilet then, it reminded me of when I first started junior school, and I went in with a pair of green tights and went home with a pair of red socks. I'd wet myself because I was too scared to ask to go to the toilet. And I was in there thinking, and it came back to me, but I've got better control of my bladder, I think. About a year ago, I was doing this commitment for finding female chairs up until August, and this time last year I was 7 years, and a couple of people in me said, oh, you should put yourself on, and that was the week I tried the hardest. I went north, south, east to find another chair so I didn't have to do it, and a couple of weeks ago I said to my husband, I think I'm going to keep it quite quiet about my 8 years. And then 2 weeks ago here, went, Roz, Sam's 8 years in 2 weeks. And she got her diary out, and it was a 40-minute chair. So I guess the only way out of things is through them. I've already turned it down a couple of times, so nervous. It's, I always kind of like, I get this mad rush of adrenaline, and I used to quite like that. I actually don't like it anymore. I really don't. I like to be really, really balanced, and I work hard at that because I can deal with everything much, much better than when I'm adrenalized and really nervous. I mean, it does happen. It's normal. And, you know, it's part of me. And someone said the other day, you just got to, you know, you just have to do this chair. You have to embrace it, and you have to embrace being nervous and everything. So here I am. As I say, I was doing this commitment for a year, and it was, for me personally, it's the best commitment I've had in the whole of my time in NA. I really, really, really enjoyed it, finding female chairs. On a personal level, it got me out of myself. I had to speak to more women, either speak to them or text them, and go out of my way to phone people and meet new people. And I actually found an amazing, amazing amount of women, brilliant women in this fellowship. And when I first started, I was a bit, personally, I think there's a bit of a misogyny that goes on in NA about like this thing of there's much more better men and stuff like that. And I've got to say, if I'm honest, that was kind of deep, you know, that's what I kind of was repeating, parrot-like somehow. And when I first started off doing this, I kind of had a list of about 10, thinking, oh yeah, this is great. And then I really, really had to go out there and find these people to do a chair. And you know, with this meeting in particular, it was, could so easily become more male-dominated. And when we first started up this meeting, we said, you know, let's create a commitment specifically for finding women. So we've got half and half, which I'd never heard of myself, personally, in England anyway, any meetings like that. So I really, really, really enjoyed it. And it takes up a fair bit of time as well. Especially, choosing people for the 50 minutes or the 40 minutes, and we had some guidelines around that. And, there's personal opinions that come into it of people doing chairs, but it's only personal opinions. Like, I've got some woman to speak, and a few people were like, oh, I don't think, you know, I don't like her and this and that. I don't think she should have done it. But the girl sitting next to me who listened to it said it was the best chair she'd ever heard. And for her, so, and part of the reason I'm saying that is because a while ago in this chair, a man sat here and said, right, I'll get it out there. You're all going to judge me, every single one of you, like I'm going to judge every single one of you. And I thought that's such a good way to start off doing a chair. Because lately I've been really, my head is loud with judgments all the time. Now, it's not like it's a new thing. It's always, always been there. But through the process of working these steps and doing this program, which I'll go into in a bit, the volume's been turned up because it's awareness. And when the volume's turned up, I can actually stop and look objectively at my judgments. And actually, judgment to me is a great tool for self-reflection. I didn't always see it like that. And that thing about a mirror, when people used to talk about the mirror, I used to hate it. I used to think, oh God, stop, you know, I want to just judge and bitch in my own head as much as I want. But I always knew that that was actually a really, really good sort of tool. And I can do that now. You know, it might not come for a few hours or a few days or something like that, but it really has been great for me. What you spot, you've got, I heard once in America. And it's so true, and it's so painful. And, it, you know, I feel really vulnerable sort of saying that sort of thing. But, yeah, I, you know, this thing about a disease and illness. A few months back, someone actually said to me that the disease of addiction is actually being classified. It's got a number. I think it's a scientific community or medical community. And that really, really was the final thing that made me really truly accept this as an illness. And I don't know where it's come from. The way I see it is a bit like cancer. Sometimes it's genetic. Sometimes it comes out of nowhere. Sometimes it might be environmental. No one quite knows. And that's the way I see this, really. And my job is to accept it. And as soon as I can keep coming back to acceptance of that, I've got a basis to work from, basically. Because when you know you've got a disease, you kind of know what you can do about it, or people guide you, or there are guidelines around it. So in a way, it's thankful that it is a disease and it's been classified. But the only way for me to have dealt with it is since I've come to NA. I have tried other things, you know, all sorts of weird and wonderful things. I tried, I thought I'm going to become a Reiki master, that's what I'll do. So on a, so coming down off crack or coke, I'd go and do some Reiki or something and just go, oh, I'm really spiritual, or shamanic drumming or something like that. And I was really spiritual, really, really spiritual. And I thought spirituality was to do with mysticism and all that sort of stuff, and the fact that my great-great-grandmother was American Indian and all this. I was like, yeah, I'm right on that path. So when I came here, it was a bit of a, you know, it was a much more practical thing. It's to do with principles. And for ages, I didn't know what principles were. And I was like, what do you mean, principles, spiritual principles? And it's really, it's sort of simple things to me now, like tolerance and patience. And love, and you know, what's best in me is my spirit. What is best in me, and what's best in others. And I still, you know, I still am into all those other things to a certain degree. Like my God of my understanding is sort of mainly comes from sort of yogic philosophies and quantum theory, which I won't go into because it's taken me a long time to work all that out. But that's what informs my understanding of my God. And I use the word God, G-O-D. I had a bit of a problem when I came in, and I think lots of people do. And I'm not into Christianity or anything like that, but this is a spiritual program, not religious. And I kind of got that straight away, but I had a problem with the word God. It was too gender specific. I thought I was Jermaine Greer, and I thought, right, so I'm going to get it changed, going to go to the area meetings. I'm going to become a GSR. I'm going to put that forward to my group. And I've seen it happen so many times, actually. And everyone was like, yeah, we've seen that happen loads of times. It's not going to happen. You're not going to get the literature changed. So now I see it as a word to suggest the concept to me. And I use it as grand overall designer. So that's my sort of way of using that word. And now I can use it quite freely. And, you know, I don't think of any kind of weird Christian sort of or Catholic or whatever. And God is a word for many. There's many, 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 many words for it. So when I was five, I'm going to tell you my story. I'll whiz through it maybe, I don't know. Everyone says that when they do this chair, and then like 40 minutes later. You know, I don't know if it's, you know, I come from a very normal family, sort of divorced, alcoholic, violence and all that sort of stuff. I feel a bit bad now talking to my family, because since I've done my step 9 and since I got married in May, this whole major healing thing's happened. And I don't blame them. I see them and I love them for what they are. And I can talk on the phone without getting annoyed with my dad and stuff like that. It's just a major thing that happened. So I am an addict because I've got the disease of addiction, I suppose. And I don't know when it started or anything like that. I used from about 15 to 33, so a fairly long time. I mean, I did sort of nick... I used to live at my nan's at the weekend, and I'd go downstairs and nick their... that yellow stuff, avocado, put the lemonade in, put a cherry on it and drink it and go, oh, it's just you and me. Yes. So I don't know if it started then, I don't know, but properly sort of using what I call properly, whereas it was kind of just full on straight, you know, into it, was from about 15. And you know, when I don't know, it's kind of, I hate to talk about specific drugs in a way. I've always felt quite uncomfortable with that, and I've been thinking a lot this last couple of years about the progression of addiction as opposed to progression of types of drugs, you know, and going up that scale. So, you know, and when I first came into NA, a couple of meetings in, a girl came up to me and went, what's your drug of choice? And I thought, oh, I've got to choose, okay. Coke. She went, oh, party drugs. And I was like, I've still got a huge resentment now, otherwise I wouldn't be talking about it. It rears its head every fucking year. I'm like, well, you haven't had a party like me, now fuck off. So this is hot, and I, you know, maybe it was the meetings I went to, I don't know, there happened to be lots of public school boys, and they were like, there's one meeting that gets called the Prada meeting, I used to call it the public schoolboys meeting. Actually, it was my home group for a while, and it saved my life a lot of the time. So, but I felt that, and I still do sometimes, although I don't come across it as much anymore, there's sort of this hierarchy of drugs, and especially if you shot up if you're a man in your dick or something like that, you know, and there's this whole kind of, I thought only in NA can it be that you're scummy junkies outside, and when you're in here, you're the top of the pile. So I just, and in the end I could laugh about it, and I just sort of used to take the piss and go, oh yeah, like, I'm so like, I'm such a hardcore junkie. This is my impression of the public school boys. So I've always had a huge, you know, I've always felt, a lot of time I felt sort of quite, in the beginning I felt quite uncomfortable with that, and, you know, there's loads and loads of excuses of why, you know, we think we don't belong here and try and wheedle its way into getting you out the door, maybe. But I feel much more comfortable about that now, because I realise that addiction is not about how you took drugs or what drugs you took. You know, I haven't injected drugs, but I've used, believe you me, they've been in every orifice except for my ears. So I don't, you know, it's kind of, and not very comfortable. So, you know, it's something that when I've got the time, I'll always talk about, because it's something that for years really, you know, bugged me. So, you know, and I read in the books that this is progressive while abstinent. And first of all, I didn't understand that. And I was like, well, how can it be? Because it's surely active addiction is when you use it. You know, that's... But what I understand it to be now is that if I... All the stuff I do, all the program, all the meetings, the service, being in the fellowship, everything I do is something put in the way, a step at a time, a day at a time, consistently, to stop me, a gap is created to stop me from going back to using. And I've noticed that when I take my foot off the pedal, what happens is I feel isolated, I isolate myself, go into denial, delusional, paranoid, self-hatred, really uncomfortable in my own skin. And I can see how, of course, the next when I backed myself into a corner, what did I always do? I would always use as a knee-jerk reaction of having this disease. So I figure now that if it means that if I go back out, then basically it's going to bang, it's going to just start right from the beginning. And that's what I've heard as well from relapsing. It might, you know, some people can have, I really, really listen to relapse stories, because for years I used to be really frightened all the time about relapsing. It was, you know, really, really frightened. And what I hear is it's just, because part of me thinks, oh, if I've, you know, that I used to think if I've had some clean time, then I'll be able to get a high again, or I'll be able to go back to that time where it was fun. Because I did have some fun times, actually. I've got to say, I had some fucking great times, and it wasn't all doom and gloom for me. And, you know, I moved to London when I was 18. I ran out of Gosport near Portsmouth, where I'm from. It's a fucking shithole. And luckily enough, I was quite intelligent, and I did A-levels, and I went to do a degree. And no one in my family has done that, except for somebody in Canada or something. And it was my way of... I rebelled slightly in that way, because my mum's second husband... Well, I came home and he tried to kill himself. Like, there was vodka and pills and cider ready for me to walk in because I was doing my A-levels. I mean, you know, that's another story, a complete nutcase. I mean, from when I was 11 to 18, that's a whole different story. So I was kind of out of there like a flash, and I moved to London, and I used to read a magazine called New Sounds, New Styles, sit in my bedroom, listening to music, reading this magazine, it's all on my own. And I came to London and I met all these people that I used to read about. I went straight to the Camden Palace. Steve Strange used to have a night there. And there was all these people there that I'd been reading about, and that was it. That was it. I was like, forget the degree. I managed to get it in the end. I don't know how, but I used to get up at 7 p.m. nearly every day. But I kind of lost myself. It was brilliant, and I had great fun, and there was lots of different, throughout the years, there's lots of different sort of music scenes and that I've been involved in. And of course, you know, I was using, but it was pretty sort of a full rapid rate, but it wasn't, it's as though I didn't have any, I was obviously in denial. I didn't feel anything. I didn't seem to feel I had any consequences. Or if I did, it didn't feel like it. There were many consequences. And when I look back now at my using, and I see littered these ghosts of people that are slowly coming back to me, saying stuff to me. Are you all right? I think you've got a problem. Why are you doing this? You're such a nice person, this. And it's kind of littered with all these signposts and people really concerned. Whereas I didn't have a clue. And it, you know, when I was 26, I sort of about a year clean, I went out and I saw this guy looking at me, and he was really looking at me really strangely. So of course I went up to him, what are you fucking looking at, sort of thing. And he said, oh no, I thought you were dead. And I remember this then came back to me. I'd forgotten all about this story, but I was found in Soho and I had to be revived. And you know, I was a year clean before I even remembered those sort of things. And I must say, it's taken me a long, long time to really, really be able to accept some of the things I did, situations I was in, and the fact that I ended up being, I'm an addict, and the consequences of being a using addict. It's taken me ages to really accept that. I was so distraught about it. And, you know, right from the beginning of coming to London, I did my degree, went to do modelling, having a great time, to where I ended up. I mean, I'm talking about outside consequences here. It was more to the inconsequences. I was getting my rent paid. I lived in a flat in Ladbroke Grove, and there were so many bottles around. I said it was all for recycling. And it was just covered in wraps and everything everywhere. And just really, really on my, completely and utterly on my own, after having sort of like this, you know, sort of surrounded by people. And my using used to, you know, obviously used to be with lots of people, being in that sort of social situation, like clubs and music and everything. But then it ended up, you know, quite a long time ago as well, just where, you know, I'd be sat in my room and a big rock of coke, and I'd be shaving it off and then chopping it up and using that on my own. That's what it kind of led to. So, you know, people talk about glamorous. I didn't have a glamorous time and all this glamorous using, but the flip side of that is very seedy, all that kind of world. It's actually many, many stories I feel, you know, like it took me ages to feel no shame about sort of all sort of degradation and what I got up to and everything. And so I ended up in this flat and I was seeing things and hearing things and sort of waking up by the side of my toilet. And when I was 11 years ago, I had what was then called a nervous breakdown. I don't know if it still is called that. But anyway, I went to the doctors and she sent me to a psychiatrist. And this is the first time a sort of professional body was talking talking about drugs. And I went to see a counsellor for 3 years. And it started off that I thought I wasn't going to her for drugs. And it ended up being like that. And it turned out she was 16 years sober in another fellowship. And she was a really, really good counsellor. And she didn't force me into it. She did ask me once, do you want to stop using drugs? And I remember saying no. And she went, okay. So we carried on for a few more years. And then eventually, that's how I heard about NA. So I was trying to stop. I mean, there was times I had tried to stop, obviously, in all those years. There was a lot of stop, start. I always felt like it was putting a full stop on something all the time. I couldn't make complete sentences for many, many years, and lots of, physical rock bottoms, mental rock bottoms, stuff like that. But I still, I didn't have a desire, I suppose, to stop using. And so as the years progressed, and then I got to 30, and I was seeing this counsellor, I had a breakdown, non-functioning, I couldn't function whatsoever. And after a few years, she said to me, I was trying to stop with her, I suppose. That's when I first thought about stopping. But what happened was, interestingly enough, I was trying to stop, but I ended up using crack. Sort of stopping and really holding on like this. And then I'd go and use more. You know, it's really weird. And she said, meanwhile, I think you can get up on your own 2 feet. And I was lying to her as well, and get you a little part-time job. And I ended up in a little shop in Downing Ladbroke Grove. And this woman ended up being... turns out she was 16 years clean in NA. So I got this introduction to all these people come in the shop. And I just was like, and I was completely, completely like a yes, people please, yes person, you know, like everything she asked me to do in the shop, I'm like, yes, yes. And a while ago, I heard that she said I was her best employee ever. And I'm thinking, it's only because I was saying yes, yes, yes. But so I met all these people who were clean. Now, I'd never come across that in my life, ever. I mean, I'd heard of AA and that was it. Never ever heard of total abstinence or anything like that. I thought it was good, but I just thought, you complete bunch of weirdos. It just felt so strange. And I started to approach this woman. Around about this time, it's really unclear, unfortunately. I had what I think now was like a more of a spiritual rock bottom, where I really was ready. A massive one where I feel really blessed about. It was all so painful, isn't it? When I went to my friend's funeral and we're all up all night on coke and crack, and then I'm lying to this woman about going into work, and I'm really wired, and I just think, A, I'm really clever because this woman's in NA and she can't tell. And B, I felt distraught because I was like, I nearly went off the cliff. I nearly fell backwards. I thought, this is it. There's no coming back from this. Because I felt like she can't see. She can't. And I didn't know how to ask for help. I didn't know, I've got a resentment about that. But anyway, what happened was, this guy used to come in the shop and work for us. He 12-stepped me. He's gay. I'm not being 13th-stepped. And he found me reading some literature. This woman had a commitment and someone brought in some literature for her, and he found me reading it. So he did that Am I an Addict test and stuff like that. And it was quite a weird day. I mean, I remember kind of making all these excuses. He'd say, and I'd be going, no, but anyway, you don't understand. I'm only doing that because of this and all this. And he saw straight through that, like we do. And to cut a long story short, he took me to my first meeting. And I've got to say that I saw something straight away. I did. I felt something straight away as soon as I walked in the room. It was a candlelit meeting on a Friday night in Denby Road. And I personally felt something, and I didn't have any words. I didn't know the word solution or power greater than myself or anything like that. But now I know it to be that. I felt it and I sensed it. After about 3 months, I was in pink cloud. That soon went. And I was sort of in a lot of pain and really angry, and you bunch of cunts, and I'm not sitting with you lot, and all this sort of stuff. But, throughout my recovery, it's so vast, the experiences. I couldn't possibly I haven't even got 40 minutes left, but even in 40 minutes, it's really hard to explain. I've been through all different stages and feelings and states of being, and what I've thought about it, what I haven't thought about it, what I've felt, what I've... I had that thing where I thought, I've put down the drugs now, I will be all right. I really thought that was it. I really did. And that's when, a bit of a shock when I realised that's the symptoms of it. And it's got to be dealt with, this illness, on a much sort of deeper level than that. And I saw the steps up on the wall, and I kind of liked them, but I thought I knew them. I don't need to do those. I've read all these books. I've read, just all these kind of weird and wonderful books, and I know about all those philosophies. They all come from a perennial philosophy, which I know loads about, and I know them, and I've read them and went, oh, I've done them. But what happened was, for me, I got carried by the fellowship for about 9 months. I felt really, it's all I could do. For me, that's what I could do. I was so closed down, so, so closed down. I'd sit there like this, like that. And I didn't share for about 9 months. I shared once on 90 days. But I went to loads of meetings, and I went out for coffees with people, and I felt really, and I didn't like a lot of individuals or anything like that, but it was this whole thing I was carried by. I heard this chair of my first meeting. I remember the guy, I know him still now, he was a year clean, and it blew me away, just the fact a man was sat there, A, talking about how he felt, B, talking about degradation that he'd been in and how he felt now. And I was just amazed anyone could be that honest and that truthful without kind of something going to happen to them or something like that. So I did have a really good experience of that. And lots of different things. At 2 years, I remember trudging along to another church basement and really just thinking, I can't do this. This is not what my life is. Please don't say this has come to this. Really depressed about it. But no matter what's happened, good or bad, I've just gone. I always just keep going to meetings, always. No matter what's been going on, and I kind of know now that it's something that I just have to do, really. It's part of the fabric of my life, whether there's good stuff going on or bad stuff going on. I've had an amazing, amazing year. There's all sorts of stuff going on. Life on life's terms, that's it. I've got freedom from active addiction, but I've got the ability, this is what I feel I've been given, I've got the ability to live life on life's terms. Now that is, that's sort of like priceless, isn't it? To live life on life's terms, it's unbelievable. And don't get me wrong, I don't wake up every day and go, yes, it's life on life's terms, or anything like that. But this year's been amazing. New beginnings, new endings, and I got married, and I moved in with him. We've never lived together before, so that's so marriage, moving in together, buying a house. So there's sort of financial pressures, and then we had this mad construction noise going on just after we moved in, outside the tube, where they'd work from 12 a.m. to 4 a.m. So for 3 months, meant to be our honeymoon phase of our marriage, with no fucking sleep, just like really stressed out, really stressed, really angry, perspective gone way off the Richter scale from no sleep, literally no sleep. Oh, it was a nightmare. But anyway, they've come up against the wrong people, really, because we kind of like put this whole plan together. They're probably thinking, who the fuck are these residents? Why don't they shut up and let us get on with it? So now we're getting some sleep, and they've changed it all. But, then my granddad died, my lovely granddad, which was really, really floored me, really floored me. And then I kind of found I had a mole, and they said it might be, it had some possibly pre-cancerous activity. So I had that taken off. It's all clear. And my mum was said she's emigrating to Canada, and I'm just, you know, it's all this stuff. And then this week, I've had some life-changing news. If all goes to plan, in about 8 months, there'll be another one of us. So it's, which is incredible, because only 2 months ago I was going, fucking little bloodsuckers, I never want one of them. And, you know, I had all this fear about it, and we didn't get married for that reason or anything like that. It's not like to have kids, and I was really against it for a while. I was so against it, and you know, I had lots of fears because I, in my really irresponsible and unmanageable when I was using, I've had, like, a miscarriage, three terminations, and the last termination was horrific. You know, I ended up hemorrhaging, I had emergency hospitals and all this sort of stuff. So it's actually quite a miracle. I'm 41 as well, so it actually really is a blessing. But what happened was, about 4 or 5 weeks ago, I went to a meeting and someone was sharing, a woman's meeting, that they were pregnant. And I felt this thing lift from my body, fear. I literally felt it really physically. And lo and behold, that was the time I'm looking at it, I would have got pregnant. It's really weird. It's really, really strange. But talking of the physical thing, I mean, addiction feels really physical to me, actually. I had a dream once. And I dreamt about what addiction is to me, how it feels on a physical sort of level, active or in recovery if I'm not doing the program. And it was like this, everything was gray, mist, couldn't see anything. And there was a cage, I was encaged in what was flesh, but from abortions. I mean, it sounds really horrible. And it was all black and yellow. And I was encaged in this. And that is what addiction feels like to me. That's you know, that dream really kind of helped me in a way. It really, really helped, and that's what it is to me. How long have I got left? Steps. Yes, I knew I'd do this. Yeah, suddenly leap around and go to the steps. But, you know, I've never ever sat down and gone through them. Like, I've not got a set thing that I say about them or anything like that. Because I couldn't possibly, when I start a step, I get this amazing glimpse of what it is, what it means. And I just go, oh, God, that's what it is. I feel it. Then that goes, and I'm like, fucking hell, I've got to write all this stuff. Christ, right, I don't get it. Why am I doing it? Start questioning it. Then I carry on writing. I do a lot of writing, actually. I've got books and books, but I do like writing, actually, once I get going. And I really am a great believer at stuff on the page rather than just all in my head, because I can read it back. It jumps back at me, and I write stuff that I didn't realize I was thinking. So I'm writing it all out. And then it becomes clearer again. And then I speak to my sponsor, and we're ready to sort of go through that step with each other. So then I'm reading it out, and I'm a bit over it by then. I'm like, you know, I want to get to the next one, because I've already had that glimpse of that one sort of thing. But then when I look back at them, they're like this huge, great big chain of things. And they suddenly all kind of link together and become really clear, and I can use them in my everyday life. I couldn't really do that in the first, it's only actually a couple of years ago where I felt like I could use all this in my life and really feel like it was sort of second nature, and practice these principles in all our affairs. Well, sometimes I can. That was only started a few years ago as well, but I'm getting the hang of that, and I probably do it more than I realise. So what's really helped me this last couple of years is I was really confused, you know, in the beginning. Not confused, but I knew powerlessness, okay, I can't control my use of drugs and all that. And then I heard someone a couple of years ago, you've all probably heard it, about what powerless means, without power, lack of power. And that just suddenly I went, that's what it means, without power. And the inability to control is as a result of not having any power. And I just went, it's just a play on words, but it really, really was amazing revelation to me. And a power greater than myself. I I start the steps, me and sponsor, we go through every single word, what it means and what it means to me, look it up in dictionaries. And the first step I did in the Green and Gold book, and the second one, we numbered all the lines in step two, and then we read it all. And then as we were reading, I had to kind of write down on a post-it note numbers of lines that jumped out of me, and then we'd spend hours discussing it and all that. So that, and I sort of had come already to believe in a power greater than myself. I can't do it on my own. I've tried to do a lot of things on my own. I still go off onto that tangent. I will try and do that. It's a kind of a natural setting. If I feel fearful, vulnerable, I can cope. Don't come near me. Put a front down. Bang. And I felt that power. I felt it when I came into the room, so I'm always grateful for that, that I've got that reference point. And I've got a thing about the third step, when people say hand over. Fuck it, I hate that. It does me in. Every time someone says it, I go, turn over. just for me, personally. For me, when I say hand over, it's like I'm handing over responsibilities. But to turn over is actually to turn to a different way, a different solution, or a different side to things. As I say, I'm not going to go into detail in all the steps. I couldn't possibly. I mean, you've got to do them for yourself and write them all, really. But step four I did in the columns, which was fantastic. I wrote eight columns. I made up eight in the end. And my sponsor's like, you're actually going to have, well, because it's NA, you've got a feelings column, so you've got five. I ended up with eight, so I had to narrow it down because I'm trying to work the next three steps whilst I'm doing my four. Well, I can work that out, and I've got to do that. But so I ended up having to narrow it down. I got down to five. I did a fear inventory, resentments, sexual harm, and harm to others. So I went through that process. And when I did my step five, and you're going to laugh, but I was in a bikini in the south of France. Now, that's not to say, right, no, it costs £50 on what John calls pikey jet, 50 quid. My sponsor lives in France, and I really didn't have a lot of money or anything. I'm not being kind of like, but she happened to live there, and it was hot, and we ended up doing this by the sea, and I really felt like it was a good thing to let all this shit go. So we went through all of that, and all these amazing patterns and things, and that all came out, and she was able to really kind of, I was able to write all this stuff down, see clearly. And then I burnt it. It was huge. It was like this. And I burnt it and watched it all burn away because I was going on to her saying, I've got trust in a higher power. She's like, right, well, burn it then. And so that was a turning point for me. That really was. Step six was really kind of painful, actually, more than step four, really. I suddenly felt things really, really acutely. I felt the grief, grieving for my nan's death and stuff like that. Really, all this stuff that obviously I'd looked at in my step four and five, I was really coming into contact with, and I was clashing between old behaviours and new behaviours, and I found it really painful. And we did this great exercise. I mean, again, I did loads of writing on step six. I know some people don't, but I really did, and I looked at how these things, all these patterns and negative belief systems worked subtly every day now rather than in the past, and I sort of just wrote stream of consciousness about them and ended up with all this stuff so that I became really, really aware, and therefore I became really, really to let go of, or willing to let go of, because it was so in my face. And at the end of that step, we did an exercise, and it was every single one of the defects. I wrote down what advantage would be gained if blank was removed. And the second part was what support would you be left with? Wow, that was mind-opening, that was, because I went through everything like that. And by the end of it, I'm like, oh, my God. And the support I was left with was all to do with God and a higher power. That's every single thing ended up like this. So I really was ready to ask God humbly after I worked out what humbly meant. And I just, for me, you know, it's sort of, I have to get to some spiritual state. And then I wrote a list for step eight, and I had to write it again because I'd burnt my step four, but it was a good exercise because I haven't forgotten, you know, and there was more stuff that had happened in between that time as well. And I did it on a much quicker way. I did it in the, you know, like, there's those little columns where you've got what part of self was affected, security, sexuality, self-esteem, all those sort of things. And then went a bit further, what would I like to have done differently? And then I did my step 9. Well, I haven't done it, I'm still doing it, but I'm doing a step 10 and 11. But I'm still ongoing with my step 9. I spoke to my sponsor the other day. She's been really ill, so she's been unavailable. But I spoke to her this week, which was great, and continue with the actions. I've got 3 sort of sets of actions, some direct, some indirect, some that I incorporate into my daily life. You know, I have a checklist, and some that are kind of just chats, so I don't have to make a big deal, not some big heavy deal. And doing my step 10 helps me keep her. I started fairly recently with my step 10, and I wouldn't say I do it every night, but when I do it, I have a fantastic day the next day, and I remember things. So I remember, for instance, little things out in the community, to smile at shopkeepers rather than like, oh, whatever, you know. And just quickly, with the word meditation does appear in the steps, so I'm not afraid to mention it. I'm really into meditation and all different forms of getting conscious contact with my higher power. Really, really into it. For me, at the moment, it's what I keep going back to. There's such a lot going on in my life. And, you know, it doesn't matter whether it's good or bad. As addicts, I didn't used to use because I was feeling bad or good. It was because I was compelled to. So I keep checking in with my meditation. And it's one of the best things I've ever done anyway. So, and I'm running out of time, aren't I? Wow. Step 12. I haven't formally worked it, so I don't have a formal way, because I like to really formally work the steps as well. So I don't really want to talk about that. I mean, you know, I could say what I think it is and everything, and I do know, have an idea, but I like to talk about them when I've really formally worked them. So I will leave it there. Thank you.
Thanks.